Welcome back to the SBS Sports Talk Show presented by the Sports Business Society at UVA. I'm Michael Rockless, along with my co-host, Mike Popper, and we have our producer and officer of technology, Will Harden, with us as well. He's going to hop on and talk some college football playoff with us. Also, we have our other main segments. As always, make sure you listen to this at 1.5 times speed. Hit it.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl. We like sports and we don't care who knows. Football, tennis, hockey.
So we have a pretty packed show this week. So, Mike, go right into it with your read.
All right, so my read is the epitome of a read option. Run. Talking about the New Orleans Saints as on track to be one of the best running back tandems in history of Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram. Talks 538 article goes into a little bit of the statistics about the most prolific tandems in NFL history, the most being, you know, Walter Payton and some fullback named Harper that he carried along with him. But basically, they're on pace to be the second most prolific in history, and that's with them splitting carries at the beginning for 4 weeks with Adrian Peterson. So,
yeah, that's my initial reaction, is that this was supposed to be Adrian Peterson, Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara, and it's been, obviously, once they traded Adrian Peterson, they've been off the charts good, especially those two guys and the Saints as a team. But that's really amazing. And, I mean, you look at this, you watch the Saints play. I think Ingram had 3 touchdowns this week. Mm-hmm. Kamara is an electric player. It's really, I mean, this is kind of shocking to think. I don't know, like, you put, you know, these Chicago guys are the ones rated higher by 538's metric. And I guess one of the other, like, dual 1,000-yard tandems was, like, Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew on Jacksonville. But, I mean, this is a really good duo.
And then you also have the old D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart tag team days from Carolina back in 2009. But, I mean, they just look – they look good, man. The Saints, I thought they were kind of a fluke up until 4 straight. Then they started, you know, really just piling it on teams without the passing game. I mean,
they don't even need Drew Brees.
Crazy statistic.
What was this is the
they,
one?
They ran the ball on 24 straight plays in the Bills. That was the longest and the most in an NFL game since the Giants called 26 straight runs in a 1989 win.
What a throwback there. I know they had one drive, I guess 24 straight runs this week. One drive was like 90 yards. I don't know how many plays. And they just ran. And the last run was of course, Drew Brees scrambling it in for the touchdown.
He had to get those points somehow.
Yeah, but it's amazing. I mean, this is the New Orleans Saints. This is the best passing attack, you know, statistically, obviously. It's not like they're the best team or anything over this stretch of time. But, I mean, it's been the best passing attack since Brees has been in New Orleans. I mean, in the history of the NFL, yeah. The yardage and the touchdowns that they've put up and Brees' consistency with Sean Payton calling plays for them, you know, to completely 180 to this round game is remarkable. And they have two excellent guys to do that with.
Well, I mean, and now you're looking back on the Brandon Cooks trade and you're thinking, well, this has been the plan all along. You know, they got rid of Brandon Cooks because they thought they had something in Michael Thomas. He's kind of underperformed, but it's more of it's a product of them not throwing the ball. And, you know, maybe this has been Sean Payton's plan from the beginning of this year once they signed AP was to, you know, just ground and pound teams. And maybe he saw something in the defense, you know, that we didn't. Because nobody expected their defense to be this good.
Yeah, it's a great story all around with the Saints. We might get to them later when we do a little NFL talk at the end. But, I mean, this is a team, you know, they trade Brandon Cooks, as you said, for a late first-round pick, which they turn into an offensive lineman. They had a first-round pick was on Marshawn Lattimore, who's, like, legitimately a top, like, 5 corner, if not better, in the NFL, like, already as a rookie. And I think what people have said is their draft class has been the best one in terms of contributing this year, which really isn't that surprising that they're 7-2 and they don't even use Drew Brees, who's an all-time quarterback.
Yeah. All right, Mike, what do you got for me?
So, on Wednesday night, Max Scherzer was awarded his 3rd Cy Young in his entire career. He has now won in 2 different leagues, one with the Tigers, 2 of the last 3 years with the Washington Nationals. And the ESPN article is called, well, is Max Scherzer an all-time great pitcher? I think they're trying to emphasize he should be in that conversation. He's had an amazing run with the Nats, going back to when he got to Detroit and really started to put things together. And he's really putting himself in that Hall of Fame elite category.
Yeah, I mean, ever since I've heard of him, the man has been, you know, straight up dominant, and especially in the NL, you know, since he got to Washington. And just to look at this last year, it was dominant. A 177 ERA plus. You know, his whip at .902, which is insanely low. Am I correct there?
Yeah.
Right. And just to see somebody put that kind of dominance in two different leagues is pretty rare. You know, you see sometimes pitchers, you know, dominate a league, like, you know, when you're able to switch it up and show that you're able to, you know, pitch in both leagues, that's pretty impressive.
Facing different hitters, exactly. Managing, I guess, in the American League, it's obviously harder with the DH, but yeah.
So, I mean, put this in perspective for me, though, like, how impressive is winning three Cy Youngs?
It's really impressive. We've seen guys like Tim Lincecum won back-to-back years. I'm trying to think of some of the other guys who may have, you know, fizzled out after they won a couple at their peaks. But, I mean, the three-time winners really seems like that echelon of being an all-time great pitcher. Looking at the names who are on the list, it's Roger Clemens and Randy Johnson and Greg Maddux and Kershaw, obviously, and Koufax and Jim Palmer. I mean, these and Pedro Martinez, shout out to the Red Sox. These are really, really...
I know all those names.
Exactly. That's the point. And Max Scherzer is now the 11th guy to join that category. Really impressive stuff for him. Obviously, watching him a lot, you know, me being from D.C. and I like to watch the Nationals. Unfortunately, he didn't pitch well in the playoff game. But, I mean, he's a lot of fun to watch. Strikes out a lot of guys. Plays with a lot of passion. He's really just become an excellent pitcher and a great signing for them. But props to him and Kluber on the other side for winning.
Yeah, so I've got, you know, a two-part question for you here, Michael. A, do you see him keeping this kind of production up? And B, what does he need to do? Is he an all-time great? Sorry, three-part. Is he an all-time great? And three, mix it up there for you. What does he need to do to be an all-time great if the answer to the previous question was no?
So the first question is, can he keep this up? I remember, and we'll try and do this quickly so we can move on, but I remember when they first signed him, he's 30 years old, and the track record of pitchers signing seven-year deals is not very good. And that was the worry when he came in. He's been excellent. Now he's continued that excellence into, you know, his three seasons with the Nationals. I'd be inclined to say he's going to keep it up. Probably not at this level. I mean, that's almost an unrealistic thing to say because he's been this good for this long and he throws hard. And he's not doesn't always go the deepest in the games, especially back to Detroit. But I'm inclined to think he's going to remain an elite pitcher, maybe not pick up his fourth Cy Young because that's almost a random fluky thing. Is he an all-time great? He's very, very good. Kershaw in his same era is obvious, is a better pitcher. There's other guys like maybe a Justin Verlander, but even at this point, he might have surpassed Verlander, his former teammate in Detroit, of course. So, I mean, you're looking at him of the guys post Maddux, post Clemens, post Pedro Martinez, post Randy Johnson. He might be number two behind Clayton Kershaw. Does that put him at an all-time great? I mean, probably not all-time, but he's definitely a Hall of Famer. So, great run for Max Scherzer. Congrats to him. Congrats to Kluber. And we'll be finding out about those MVPs shortly.
I'm excited. I can't wait.
Yeah, I know you can't.
Once you drop the mic.
All right, so we're going to talk about a team close to home and then a general landscape. UVA, Wahoos, and basketball this time. So, we've talked a lot about the football team. Now, we're going to talk about the Tony Bennett squad. 2-0 on the young season, play at neutral site Friday against VCU.
Against VCU.
And then a couple other soft games until we face Wisconsin in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. I know we both went to the first game against UNC Greensboro. Not a terrible team.
Frustrating.
And then we blew the doors off of Austin Peay. My initial reaction, I would say I'm not the most optimistic about this season. Obviously, in the context of really high expectations for this team since we've been here, you know, this is our third year, one Elite Eight appearance as a one seed, which should have been further than that. And then last year we were ranked the whole season. We got blown out.
That was just bad.
Yeah. But we were ranked the whole season. This team, I don't know if they'll be worse than last year, but this is definitely far from the team that we saw our first year.
Yeah. I mean, so we kind of talked about this a little bit and it's just, they don't have the guy.
You know, Kyle guy. They have a guy.
They don't have the guy. You know, they don't have the at least last year, you know, you could give it to London and be like, okay, I'm kind of comfortable he's going to get us a bucket. Who do you go to now? There's nobody on this team that I would be comfortable. 30 seconds left. We need to either A, put away the game, or B, get a bucket. I don't know who I'm going to there. And the offense isn't a good enough offense, you know, to free up shooters. And that's where I think we're going to
high tense situations.
Exactly. And that's where I think we're going to run into trouble.
I agree with you. I mean, obviously throwing up 90-some points against Austin Peay looks good. I mean, but you're going to get what you want against a team like that, exactly. Which surprisingly they were not able to do against UNC Greensboro. I mean, that's a 12-point win at home. You know, albeit to start your season, you know, you're still figuring things out. I know it took, you know, them a long time to figure out what they wanted to do last year and even the year before. But no, I completely agree with you. I think Kyle Guy is going to be relied upon to score a lot early in games, but really at the end of the game, I'm not confident that he can get what he wants off the dribble in an ISO situation. Mm-hmm. Definitely don't feel that way about Devin Hall, and I haven't seen Ty Jerome play well through, you know, the early two games when he was supposed to take a big leap. So there are some big question marks with this team, but Pac-Line defense will keep them in it for the most part.
I wonder if that guy will turn into Nigel Johnson. He looked explosive. He looked like he's got the speed to get to the basket, to the hoop, but does he have the shot, you know, to create his own? He's small.
Yeah, I like Nigel Johnson kind of as that sixth man off the bench. I don't think I like him. You know, maybe he could be in that best lineup at the end of the game, but I don't like looking to Nigel Johnson to put games away. But you never know. You almost feel like it's either Devin Hall, who's, you know, senior on the team. He's been around every year. You know, he's contributed. It's either him, and he's playing well, and he's just a solid player, or it's going to be like a Kyle Guy really maturing and just – I think potentially just watching how – he's a pretty confident player. Yeah. Watching him play, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he puts up, you know, a solid 15 to 20-plus points a game. I mean, he's going to be firing away, and he's really got a great shot.
Yeah, I mean, or, you can even go low to Isaiah, but he just – he doesn't really inspire anything when he's in the post.
Yeah,
well, none of the big men do, but...
No, but when you throw it back to, like, when we were first years and they had the really good team, they had Anthony Gill, who you could throw the ball to in the post and get an ISO bucket there. And then another guy, Will, really wants us to talk about Jay Huff, kind of the fan favorite, maybe taking over for the Mike Toby, tall white guy, plays in the perimeter.
Skinny as poop, though.
Yeah, interesting. Jay Huff, offensively, he's not going to be your go-to guy to get a bucket. I mean, and is he even going to be able to be on the floor?
He can't play defense.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go. Just kind of wanted to talk about them. Additionally, some good college basketball games last night. Always appreciate, you know, the Dukes and Michigan States and Kentuckys and Kansases of the world going out and playing each other. So two good games from that.
College basketball needed some good games.
Yeah, good to see them.
Off-season drama
Do that last night. Yeah, the off-season drama of LiAngelo Ball.
No, I'm more talking about the scandal that happened.
Rick Pitino. That's probably a more important.
It's a much more important.
Yeah. Anyways, all right, we'll keep it with basketball. And Mike, drop the mic for me.
Yeah, so I got you some fresh beef in the NBA. LeBron James took on the entire city of New York. You know, it's all started when he called out Frank Nicolucadicuna for...
Frankie Smokes. Frankie Nicky.
Frank the Tank. Didn't call him out directly, but took a shot at what's his face?
Phil Jackson.
Phil Jackson for not drafting Dennis Smith Jr. The entire Knicks team took that as a shot at Frank.
Especially Enes Kanter.
Especially Enes Kanter. You get to the game, there's a lot of back and forth. Within the first half, LeBron dunks it down goes down the lane for the dunk. Nikola goes for the ball, tries to plow through LeBron James. He can't do it. Right? Enes Kanter comes out of nowhere and starts trying to fight with LeBron James.
And then you're missing the start. They get the tack on LeBron. Knicks go up 23.
Then LeBron just absolutely brings the Cavs back from the dead. Engineers a 23-point third/fourth quarter comeback, hits the step back J over Kristaps Porzingis, then posts on Instagram, "I'm the king of New York, you're welcome."
Interesting. You know, LeBron, it's so funny how this guy who we want to hold on this pedestal of all-time great, which is very deserved, and he's a top two, three, whatever player of all time.
Two.
Why is he getting into, you know, scrappy fights with the lowly New York Knicks? Like, I don't get what he's doing.
Well, so, like...
I mean, it's a Phil Jackson shot.
It's a Phil Jackson shot.
Because of the comment he made
posse comment. I mean, we don't have to get into it. But it's more of, he's taking a shot at Phil, but he's doing it at the wrong time. Phil's no longer there. There's no reason to drag a rookie into it. But, you know, I'll be damned if I don't love some beef in the NBA. It makes the regular season a little more exciting.
Probably the only thing that makes the regular season in the NBA exciting.
Well, I was genuinely excited to watch a New York Knicks-Cleveland Cavaliers fan. I mean, game. Granted, I'm a LeBron fan, so I watch a lot of his games. But there are people out there who went out of their way to watch that game because of the beef.
I didn't even know about the beef until it happened. But, you know, the funny thing is the NBA gets this good, kind of good buzz, storyline, rivalry, whatever you want to call it. They don't play each other until the last two games of the season. So now it's on hiatus for a while.
We're going to start some more. Don't worry.
Yeah, LeBron and his online social media stuff, he seems to be picking fights left and right. Interesting behavior from someone who's as established as he is. But anyways, all right, we're going to move on into our first main topic of the night. We're going to be talking a little college football playoff breakdown. One of the things I want to say before we start this, I may have said it last week, I just love college football playoff debate. There's
some of the best time of the year.
It really is. They do these rankings once a week for a couple weeks before they do the final ones after all the conference championship games. And just the scenarios, the alternatives, who gets in, the debate, the early season schedule, just all those things, the conferences. There's so much to talk about. So that's why we're bringing Will on. He's going to talk college football with us and just go over this because I think there's a lot of ways to go with this. So just to start, Will, I know one of the bones you wanted to pick is the committee putting the Clemson Tigers with one loss at number two, almost like they want Alabama and Clemson to play again.
Yeah, I just don't really understand that. I mean, Miami, as of recently, has looked better than Clemson. Clemson, granted, they looked great at the beginning of the year before they lost to Syracuse. Like, they beat Auburn, who was probably a different team earlier than they are now. They beat Louisville, who was... They had game day when they played Louisville, who's bad now. But Miami, just the way they beat Tech, the way they destroyed Notre Dame, who many people were really, really high on.
That's
the biggest surprise for me.
I mean, you go out, Miami goes out, beats a top three. They were
destroys
third.
They won
44-8,
something like that.
They absolutely took Notre Dame, squashed them. And you only ranked them at third, undefeated, through a pretty tough ACC schedule so far.
Same ACC general schedule
that Clemson's played.
But now Clemson did have the out-of-conference game against Auburn, mm-hmm. which is a really good win. But their loss, Kelly Bryant was hurt when they lost
to
Syracuse.
Yeah, he got hurt in the first
half.
That's
still just an embarrassing loss.
That's a bad loss.
But, you know, the amazing thing is they can survive it because they just went out and they're going to get in as the number two team. But Miami's really the story here. It's kind of surprising that they aren't number two. I mean, granted, it was a home game against Notre Dame. But, I mean, to win as emphatically as they did, I mean, is a huge, huge sign. They do have a tough game this weekend. The Hoos are traveling down to South Florida.
Oh, you know
we're
going to give them a run for their money.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's looking like Miami and Clemson are going to square off as, you know, the second and third teams when they play in that ACC championship game, assuming everything holds. Interesting, of course, we mentioned, we talked about Auburn when we were referencing Clemson. Auburn, home game, blows the doors off of Georgia, who was number one. Now you're looking at a scenario where Alabama, I think they have to play at Auburn this year. Huge game. Does Alabama get, if they lose that game, did they get into the playoff?
Well, here's the thing. If they lose that game,
they're not
Auburn's in the SEC championship.
And so Alabama's done. Because of the tie break.
I mean,
who did Auburn lose to in conference?
LSU.
LSU, close.
By
okay.
four. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure they blew a lead in that game.
Wow. Yeah. If Auburn gets into the SEC championship game, then loses to Georgia.
Georgia's in.
Does Alabama sneak
Does
in?
Auburn...
I don't
think
Auburn
what happens.
Does
Alabama get in? That's the real question.
I just
question.
Don't think Alabama gets in unless they win the SEC championship. Because
you're saying even if they lose in the SEC,
looking at their schedule, okay, they beat LSU, they beat Mississippi State. If they beat Auburn, that would be a good win. But
they beat Auburn, they're in. Yeah.
So I think if they make, as long as they make the SEC championship, I think they're in.
Florida State win. The really interesting thing with Alabama is they scheduled Florida State mm-hmm. beginning of the season. They were ranked first. Florida State ranked third, and that was kind of the setup. Of, okay, we can afford to lose this game early, and if we win, it's going to be a huge, you know, star on our resume.
No, Florida State is
But
awful.
Florida State is a I mean, they mm-hmm. Francois played most of the game against Alabama, and it wasn't like his injury was the reason they lost. But Florida State, if you were just looking at, you know, a team and comparing, that is not an impressive win whatsoever based on, you know, a strength of schedule and anything like that. So I think Alabama, with no other really impressive wins on the schedule, I mean... You know,
Mississippi State, that game
went down to the wire, though. Mm-hmm. Way down to the wire. They could have lost that game. They will need to beat Auburn to get in. Now, if Alabama wins, against Auburn, and then Georgia beats Alabama. Could you see both those teams getting in? I think that's an interesting debate.
I think both those teams get
but
in.
That,
I think, well, see, I think it would depend on what happens
with everyone else.
The conferences.
So
if Wisconsin, Big Ten's not going to get a team unless Wisconsin wins out. So that's the only way.
What about Ohio State, though? What?
No way, Ohio State.
No, here's why I love talking about this. Ohio State, if they beat Michigan, that gets them, and I don't think Michigan's ranked right now. Michigan's 24. Yeah. So if they beat Michigan, they go into the Big Ten championship game. They're ranked ninth right now. A couple other dominoes fall. They would leap Notre Dame. They would leap an SEC team probably. And then they would leap Wisconsin because they would beat an undefeated Wisconsin team. There are pieces in place where I think Ohio State could sneak in as number four. They'd probably need Oklahoma to lose. That's probably it. If Oklahoma loses, then you could have Ohio State in because they'd be beating Wisconsin. And you would have an SEC team and an ACC team. And that's three teams. They would be in probably at number three. I mean, how crazy is
that? In that situation, just do both ACC teams make it?
Could there be? Is there a chance?
Miami,
who would have to win that game for both?
Miami has to win for both ACC teams.
You think it's a two-loss Clemson?
Yeah, I would think it's
the other way around.
No, I think that Miami, if Miami loses, they're gone.
They're done. Even though they would have Notre Dame and Virginia Tech, who's unranked right now. That's fantastic, by the way. And now Oklahoma is they're a one-loss team. They beat Ohio State, of course, which is going to be huge. Mm-hmm. And then they lost at home to Iowa State. Oklahoma probably they may be able to survive another loss better than a Clemson or
right,
Miami.
Right, because they're pretty much a shoo-in for the Big 12 championship.
Right, but I mean, mm-hmm. It's just crazy.
The thing is I don't think Oklahoma is a threat. Their offense is great.
To what?
To any other team that's going to make the CFP. They just their defense is historically bad.
I think a Miami OU matchup would be very interesting.
That would be interesting.
Offense versus defense.
Exactly. And Miami's offense isn't necessarily
great,
spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have the Heisman going up against turnover chain mm-hmm. defense. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be a good matchup.
The fans would enjoy that.
Ooh, just imagine in Alabama, Miami, Oklahoma, and throwing anyone else you
Clemson.
Want. Ohio State maybe sneaking
Clemson,
in.
Clemson, Alabama in
round
the
one.
Semifinals.
They could get some good options here. Looking kind of downrange, is there anyone outside of the top the teams we've mentioned? So Ohio State and then Georgia on up, which includes Auburn, Wisconsin, and all the other teams we've been mentioning. Is there anyone else that even has a chance? Like, does a UCF at 9-0 have a chance? They're at 15 right
now.
They've
got a leapfrog.
No.
They need a lot of help. But what about
a non-Power 5 is not going to make it unless basically
good from
the
start.
What I think is two years in a row. You basically have to go undefeated 2 years in a row for a non-Power 5.
Yeah, you have to start
old Boise State.
Exactly.
Yeah, you need to start in the top 15 so that you can keep jumping teams.
Almost like USF did if they hadn't lost.
Yeah, and that's going to be a problem for them.
And UCF is actually playing USF either this week or next week.
Okay, so that could be a good win for them. But just looking at that, I mean, it looks like we've kind of whittled it down to maybe 7 or 8 teams, a lot of different directions it could go. Doesn't look like a Pac-12 team is going to get in, but we might get a double ACC, we might get a double SEC. And who knows with, Notre Dame could hang around, Ohio State, obviously. So it'll be interesting. I always love talking college football playoff. We'll probably circle back
weeks?
To that. Well, I think there's, 3 more weeks because we got 2 more regular mm-hmm. seasons and then the conference championship.
Right, so when's rivalry week?
That's Thanksgiving. So mm-hmm. not this week, the week after.
Oh, right. It's always over Thanksgiving.
It's always over Thanksgiving. That's a dumb question. Yeah. All right, so now we're going to move on to an NFL topic, have a little fun. So I don't
all
know.
All of you OG listeners will appreciate this.
Yeah, the listeners who have been with us since day two, not day one. We made, before the season had started, 10 one-sentence NFL predictions, 5 each. We're going to revisit those, and we're just going to critique each other. One of them is held better than the other. That's all I'll say.
But one of them had more outlandish picks than the other,
or just dumber picks. I to be honest,
outlandish.
Well, you'll see. You'll
one
see.
One of them is
outlandish now because
no,
you were just
them,
wrong.
One of them, so. Took the opportunity to share his craziest views on a platform. The other one just took the most conservative picks possible.
Nice.
One of them wasn't even about football.
They're all about football. Oh, no. Football. It's all football. No, all right.
That's the last one's all right. Football.
So, Mike's, we'll do this. I'll tell you his one. So, his first one that he said was that Marcus Mariota, the quarterback of the Tennessee Titans, the number two overall pick, the 2015 NFL draft, could have been an Eagle in a different universe.
In a different world.
He said that Marcus Mariota was going to be an MVP candidate. Mike, how's that held up?
Not the best.
Not, no, I think it wouldn't
has
say
to,
so.
I think it has to do with him missing those two games early on in the season, really kind of threw off his chemistry. Also, I kind of built this argument on the back of an upgraded wide receiver core, and Corey Davis got injured week two. He played his first last game back weeks. Last 2 weeks. So much like a lot of things that I predicted, injury bug got the best of them.
Sure.
I stand by it. It's not that bad. It wasn't that outlandish.
Yeah, I mean, when has Marcus Mariota ever performed at, you know, that MVP level? The team has won games. They're probably a playoff team. Big game against the Steelers.
They will be a playoff team. Yeah,
predicted. They should be a playoff team. But, I mean, and it's funny because there's a lot of guys who have leapfrogged Mariota in that quarterback conversation, in my opinion, this year. And him and Jameis, same draft class, have both. I don't know about Mariota taking a step back, but definitely have not elevated their game in year three.
I think that injury was a big deal. Michael's first one was, you know, kind of bland. Which one?
This one.
That Deshaun Watson will be the new Dak.
I nailed that.
That one's not bland. Sorry. I thought we were doing a different one first.
Nailed that. That is on. I actually underestimated Deshaun Watson.
I am going to just, you know, give you credit for this one.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You did a good job. And
he wasn't even starting when I said that.
Yeah. I gave you flack for that.
But, I mean, that was
unreal. You got lucky Tom Savage didn't play up to the level I thought he was going to.
Here's the thing. Both were number four. Both first names start with D.
Lots of similarities.
Similar style of play, electric players. And Deshaun Watson, honestly, he's got weapons, Fuller and DeAndre Hopkins, okay running game, but he was
Lamar Miller's a good
really good until back. He got injured. I know we were upset when he got hurt, but yeah, nailed that. So can chalk one up in my column. Thank you. I appreciate the applause.
Anytime I can.
So your next one that we're gonna talk about is that Jadeveon Clowney was going to lead the NFL in sacks. Will, I don't know who's leading the NFL in sacks, but I can tell you it is not Jadeveon Clowney.
So, again, I'm going to default to the injury bug. If you go back and listen to my rationale, I pretty much say that J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus will be the reason he would lead the NFL in sacks. And, you know, fast forward 2 weeks, and they're both out with injuries. So I don't think that's my fault.
Yeah, so, Will, you got the stat update for us?
Yeah, so DeMarcus Lawrence, defensive end from Dallas, leads the NFL in sacks with 11.5.
Find me Jadeveon.
He's got to hit the search here. Yikes.
Clowney sitting at 6.
Tied for 17th.
All right, but now imagine J.J. Watt's there.
Wrong.
No, it's just not wrong.
It's, like, I mean it's a tough break. But, yeah, like, that's a tough line break, but, like,
That's just like the injury bug. Cause
he hasn't been injured.
But my basis for the prediction was that the players around him will make him better.
It's not unfair, but
no, it is. It is not unfair. It's true.
Okay.
Now we'll go to the bland pick that Mike had. Mike said it'll be the year of the running back. How hard was that?
I mean, David Johnson's been injured, and it's still been the year of the running back. I forget which article I read, but I did see something that's like, oh, the three-down running back is like an actual thing again in the NFL. You're welcome. I nailed that one too before it happened. So we got Kareem Hunt, Le'Veon Bell, Zeke, obviously, when he's not suspended. David Johnson would be that kind of guy. We're seeing it around the league. Fournette's been that kind of player.
Dalvin Cook was that Cook, kind of guy.
There is a lot of new blood that was coming in that was going to fulfill those shoes. Saquon Barkley's going to do an excellent job for whoever drafts him next year. I think we're kind of getting back to that time where teams really kind of value that workhorse running back. This will be the third year in a row, stamp this, that a running back goes in the top five because we went Zeke and then we went Fournette both at 4 and Saquon's gonna be in the top 5.
Going to be top 3, I think.
Yeah, so I think it's back. It's back to being a valued position. Saw it the last couple of years and it's really become a big thing this year. All right, next one for you, Mike. We're going to go with your boy, Landon Collins, would be the defensive player of the year in the NFL. I don't think anyone on the Giants is winning anything of the year except for worst.
So, just kind of speak to this one. I was expecting the Landon Collins to take a step forward. And if you had watched his play in year two, you would have agreed with me. Anybody would have agreed with me. I bet all of you listening along were like, yeah, that's a good pick. I agree with him. And
safeties don't win that award.
And sometimes last person was Troy Polamalu, and Landon Collins had better stats than Troy Polamalu last year. So I was wrong. I don't know what else you want me to say.
He's just an overrated player a little
he's
bit.
He's not overrated.
Just a little bit.
He's not overrated.
All right,
he's not. He's not overrated.
I mean, so, Giants, they had a great player there, 11-1 win.
Oh, yeah,
lost
really.
The 49ers.
It's all Landon Collins'
fault.
It's
not
fault.
His
yeah.
fault, but
yeah,
let's
blame,
do something.
Blame,
I mean, you're
blame, yeah, blame,
great leader. Your team quit on your coach. I mean, all that stuff.
Yeah,
good
job,
Landon.
That's all Landon Collins' fault.
It's not his fault.
You're really going to blame all of this on
I'm
Landon
not,
Collins?
I'm
you're
not.
Blame, that's
I'm not.
Ridiculous.
I'm
you're
just
unbelievable.
Saying. I'm saying you, this.
Yes. Oh, you're so homer.
You sent an,
you
MVP, an MVP defensive player of the year candidates on the worst, like the second worst team in the NFL.
That nobody predicted.
Fair. Okay.
So
I just thought I was like ribbing him a little bit at the Giants. It's a good year.
Yeah, I hate you. So your pick, I don't know if I agree if this one is a success, but the Tank is transferring from NBA to NFL. I don't really know, you know, if that's true, but what do you got?
I would not call it a success, but I will just, it's not a success, but I couldn't be happier with how it played out because Mike's very own New York Giants, if any team, if you were to do a ranking of any team, like, actively trying to lose, it is his New York Giants at 1-8. 1-8. They lost to the 49ers this
past week.
That's
a good loss now. That's a good loss.
Exactly. Look, he's embracing the Tank as a Giants fan. He wants. So, I may not have been right. The Niners, traded. But, no.
The excitement in his voice is kind of saddening, isn't
it?
He has such little to get excited about in his life that he needs to be excited about my hardships.
I mean, that's true. I said this, and it's been generally wrong, but that the one team that's really trying to lose games is your very own New York Giants. You thought we're going to the Super Bowl this year, or we're getting close to it. It's fantastic. So I'll take that any day of the week. Moving on. All we have on Mike's side of this are duds. The next one, Aaron Donald will not play until week 10.
Okay, so
when did Aaron Donald come back?
He came back in week 2. I was a little off, all right? But the reasoning was there. The dude wanted more money, and the best way to get more money is by not playing. So, all right, let's bring it back here, guys. Let's bring it back. The logic made sense behind the pick. Aaron Donald hated the Rams. Nobody expected them to be good. I was predicting the Rams to be 4-14. That's why I predicted this. They wouldn't be winning games. Aaron Donald wouldn't want to risk his, you know, his ass out there for the team that sucked. But now they're 7-2. It's unbelievable. I can't get a freaking pick right. You know how demoralizing this is?
This is sad. I mean, the next one's also horrendous. So stay tuned. You know. If you don't remember it, all right, Mike, hit me with my fourth one.
Chill out on Derek Carr. Also, medium. Not too
medium,
hot, not too cold.
Better than
one.
Aaron Donald and Landon Collins and Clown. You know, they started out 2-4. I think maybe even worse than that. And he played the game of his season Thursday night against Kansas City to keep them alive. I was very impressed with that game. They went to Miami. They've won that. They've kind of repositioned themselves in the hunt. But I'll be honest. He was in that. Oh, look.
He's brought himself back.
Though. He's going to take that leap from, you know, playoff team last year to MVP, Rodgers, Brady, Breeze. Hasn't been Derek Carr. It is not. He's been chilled on a little bit because Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott, got to get my guys, especially
Carson
my guys.
Wentz, yeah.
Got to get them. They've eclipsed Derek Carr. So.
I don't know if you could say that they've eclipsed him this year. Yeah, that's true.
He's got better weapons than they do. I mean, where's Amari Cooper been?
Amari Cooper sucks. Drops every ball that's thrown to him.
I mean, but is he not better than Dez Bryant and Alshon?
I would take Dez Bryant over Amari Cooper. That was a stupid comment.
I would not take Dez Bryant.
I would take 100% of the man. Will shaking his head.
Oh, yeah. Dez all day.
There it is, Will.
You're a bad tiebreaker. All right. I don't think I missed that one, though. All right.
Last one.
Mike writes. So here's the thing. Mike writes this article for the website. Check it out.
That was going to be my reasoning behind this.
Yeah, that wide receivers in the combine, I kind of blew it there. They they fail. Like when you when you base things off of their speed, they're overrated. Here comes Tyreek Hill. Mike says he's going to be a bad player this year. How's Tyreek Hill been for you?
He's exactly what I thought he was going to be, but just a little bit more.
Just way
he's
better.
He's a long ball hitter.
But he just hits every game.
He just somehow hits every game. I was right in my conception of the idea that he would not be that good just because he relies on the long ball so much. But, you know, Alex freaking Smith decided to play like a freaking MVP and just tear my... Doesn't he ever think about, like, me? And, like, my predictions? But no, he's just got to go out there and play like an MVP. And, you know, now I'm sitting here arguing to you about why I still think Tyreek Hill isn't that good.
But he's good.
He's good.
So Mike went 0 for 5. In short, 0 for 5. So
it was a good 0 for 5, though. It's about as good as an 0 for 5 you can get. And, yeah, this is the one I brought up at the beginning. Yeah,
This is not bland.
Mike really made 4 NFL predictions and 1 League of Announcers predictions. Yeah, Tony Romo would be a great candidate in the booth. I disagreed at first. You know, I said, he's awkward. He's an awkward guy. I haven't watched any of his press conferences. I was uninformed. And he's not awkward. He's a freaking god in the booth.
What can I say? When you have faith and objective faith in guys like I had in Tony Romo, love the guy, even as when he's the quarterback of the Cowboys, I liked him. You just knew. You just had to have known. Excellent pick by me. I cautioned. I was like, yeah, give the guy a couple of weeks. He's got to warm up. You know, it's out of the gate. This guy is the number one color commentator in sports. Another guy who I really like is as a TV analyst, Alex Rodriguez. Objectively, just a big fan. I nailed it. What can I say? Romo, excellent. I love watching the Romo game every week.
Something that I forgot, you know, to take into account in my arguments here. Is that Mike knows everything? So I don't even know why it was worth having a section about this because Mike knows everything. So.
It's not true. But the thing is, I swept you in this. Your best, I just swept you.
I mean, we should have done an NBA one. I don't know why we didn't do an NBA one. I do good on that one.
We should do that for every sport that we care about.
Yeah, we should.
Which is all but baseball and soccer.
Now you guys kind of see a little glimpse into the brainstorming process that is the SBS Sports Talk Show. Okay. So let's move on to the All 267, where even here I'm, you know, just blowing up. It's unbelievable.
Can't get anything right. I've taken a 4-game lead. There's 6-7 weeks left in the season.
It's makeable. I have said it 2 weeks in a row. I will go 11-4 this week. I don't even know how many games there are. There's less than that.
There's a lot of bye weeks this week. 6.
I will go 11-2. Mike will go 8-8.
We have the same picks.
We have 3 off. That's why I said 11-2.
Okay.
You can't go 8-5. And I will make 3 games back. Book it.
And you still would be losing. Let's just use the All 267 to talk about last week. Obviously, the headlining game, because the Philadelphia Eagles were not on otherwise, that is always the headlining game,
yep.
Was the Dallas Cowboys at the Atlanta Falcons. No Tyron Smith, no Ezekiel Elliott. Sean Lee gets injured. Dallas, bad.
They can't play without Sean Lee.
Now, let me say this. Do you know where I'm going with this?
You're
going
to say the Eagles are going to win the NFC.
No, I don't even. This is bigger picture than that. So, I just said Tyron Smith, Zeke, yada, yada, yada. Jason Peters, Hall of Fame left tackle, out for the season. Jordan Hicks, captain of the Eagles defense, middle linebacker. Darren Sproles, third down back. Not a Zeke.
You're trying to compare Darren Sproles to Ezekiel Elliott. We lose Caleb Sturgis.
They lose Dan Bailey. Those are the same 4 injuries. Maybe lean on, you know, Sean Lee and Zeke. Carson Wentz, what does this fellow do? Oh, he's 8-1. Dak loses to a mediocre team. 27 didn't even have a heartbeat in that game.
The Eagles have beaten, like, 1 or 2 teams that are better than the Falcons.
Carolina. Washington twice.
I would say that the Falcons are better than the Redskins.
Yeah, it's fine. But so we'll beat Dallas this week, so.
Okay.
It'll come up. So that's the big one, but also just, like, generally, what are your reactions to that? Is Dallas in big
trouble? Dallas is in shambles.
I mean Zeke just accepted his suspension.
Zeke is out for 5 more games. The dude, you know, you always kind of thought that the line played a role, and we'll see it a little more, I think, when Tyron Smith actually gets back. But I think he helps the line out with his vision. And he is a great player. As much as I don't like the dude, you got to step back and say, this guy's for real. And without Sean Lee, that defense, he holds – it's unbelievable how one guy can just hold this defense together. But he really does it. He might be one of the most important defensive players in the league for a team.
I think it's him and Kuechly.
Yeah.
Are the two most – like, in the Eagles, when they beat the Panthers, Kuechly got hurt early in the game, and it was
– oh, I forgot about that.
It's a night and day difference, and it's shocking how night and day difference it is when Sean Lee gets hurt in the middle of a game, which is often – That's
valid. Yeah.
That's the best way to compare it. And it's like they go from like the Dallas should have a bad defense to like holding their own to all of a sudden they're trash like you would expect. It's really, but they're in big trouble because they still have the Eagles. They Oakland, which may be a tough game. They got Seattle when Zeke comes back. They got the Redskins on after Thanksgiving. They got the Chargers still. Like
they got two games against the Giants.
One game. Eagles have two games. Yeah, we have two. If they lose. Two more games, three more, it's over. Like, the NFC is top heavy. Top heavy, it's just top. Like, it's a lot of teams up there.
These last 7 weeks, seven weeks, are going to be really, really, really exciting. And I'm going to get to take it all in stress-free.
Because your team is sitting at the bottom embracing the tank.
Loving it.
Yeah, the interesting thing, and this is the real problem that a team like the Cowboys and the Falcons and the Seahawks have, is the teams ahead of them, all four of the division leaders, are teams you did not expect to be there. Mm-hmm. The Eagles, the Saints, the Vikings, and the Rams. And those teams look like primed to make the playoffs. Like, I don't see any of those teams falling off. And now, so if you consider those four teams in, you're looking at Carolina, Seattle, Atlanta, Dallas, and even throw Detroit in there. I think they're
four.
Yeah, similar record, maybe a game behind Seattle. But those are all... Like, that's two playoff spots for that group of teams.
You got to think Carolina's
getting
that.
And Green Bay, too. Like, if Aaron Rodgers was healthy, that would just be another peg because they were probably...
Well, Carolina's 7-3 now.
They got their bye week this week. So they're
7-3, that's good.
And they're on the hot seat. Because, yeah. I mean, the Saints... I mean, all those teams at 7-2, the Rams and the Saints and the Vikings, like, maybe they could... But, like, it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah.
I mean, it really doesn't. So it's going to be a great race down the stretch. Meanwhile, in the AFC...
I don't know.
Yeah, really. It's like a search because you have the Jaguars and Titans are both 6-3. Looks like they'll both get in as division winner and wild card. But then who wants to be the sixth seed? The
Bills are gone.
The Bills are 5-4. Are they 5-4?
They're 5-4.
And they benched their starting quarterback. They're the only 5-win team in the AFC. Everyone else is 4-5 or whatever they are at this point. And I mean,
Nobody wants it. I don't think anybody does.
Who's going to compete for it? That's the end of the day. Who's like I just don't know which team is going to be able to compete for this position, this spot in the playoffs. And it's really like it's not going to be the Bills. Could it be the Ravens? It's probably the Raiders.
The Raiders are going to sneak into the playoffs.
The Raiders, they got to play the Cowboys still. They got to play the Patriots this week. They got to go to Philadelphia at the end of the season. Like. That's a lot of losses there.
Yeah. If
they lose those three games, they're an 8-8 team. I don't think.
Right, but I think an 8-8 team could make this.
Oh, man.
The sixth seed.
Maybe. All right. Well, that'll do it for a little bit of a loony version of the show. We had a good time out here tonight. We are going to try our very best, call it likely, probable, that we're going to get an episode out next week for
Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's a busy holiday for the Popper family. But thanks for listening, guys. As always, Will, take us away.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. I'm shooting hoops to the Super Bowl. We like sports and we don't care who knows.
Football, tennis, hockey, golf.